The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with Bob Dio, engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. A snappy salute from Mr. Dio and welcoming you and us to the Buckmaster Show on Friday, July the 26th, 2019. We're here every weekday. We're live on 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted local news talk. We have our worldwide live listening and podcasts at buckmastershow.com. Friday, we like to do our media shout-outs, and right at the top of the list, appropriately enough, because the editor and founder and publisher is with me in studio, Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan, thank you for all you do for the community.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
Green Valley News and Saharita's Sun, our friend Dan Shear, and Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications, including Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview today, Leah Marquez Peterson is with us. Leah is the former head of the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce in Tucson, one-time Republican candidate for Congress, now the newest member of the Arizona Corporation Commission, which oversees, among other duties, Arizona's utilities. Ms. Marquez Peterson was chosen by Governor Ducey to fill the vacancy on the five-member ACC board created by the resignation of Andy Tobin. She will have to run in 2020 to keep her commission post. Leah, it's good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you, Bill, for having me.
How's the job going? 7 weeks and counting, right?
It has been.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so interesting. I get a lot of congratulations as I'm out and about in the community, but the number of folks who don't know what the Arizona Corporation Commission does is surprising. So I'm glad you've kind of identified that we regulate utilities, electric, water, wastewater, securities division, business incorporation, pipeline, railroad. I mean, it's very broad, and it really does impact so many families' lives throughout the state of Arizona. I have been, like, cramming for finals, if you can imagine, you know, as all these issues come before the commission.
I think, Dylan, a lot of people don't know anything about the ACC, but I think you could make the argument, for a consumer anyway, it's the most important agency the state has.
Every election year, I jump up and down telling people this is probably, when it comes time to pay their bills every month, probably the most important vote they cast. It's more important than the governor or the president or Congress when it comes to your day-to-day life, mm-hmm. and what actually, you know, affects your bills and affects whether you have, you know, a decent electrical service and all of that. And it's a little bit down the ballot and has a kind of convoluted name, and people skip over it, unfortunately.
No, and I think you're absolutely right, Dylan. And in many cases, it's even a life and death issue with electricity and water. I mean, these are things that we need to operate every day, whether you're as a resident or as a small business or a large corporation. And the Arizona Corporation Commission is really dealing with so many of these important issues.
Well, we've seen very recently that it absolutely is a literal life or death issue. If somebody gets their power turned off because they owe, what was that poor woman's bill last year?
It was
$25 or something like that.
She paid half. And I mean, it was a very, very
and
sad situation.
APS, the power company up in the Phoenix area, and really most of the state, shut off her electricity. So then she didn't have any air conditioning. And she was found dead.
Was she the only one? Were there other cases? Have other cases come up?
Well, it's interesting. Yeah. As I stepped into this this important role at the Arizona Corporation Commission, we learned of Mrs. Pullman's death. That was her name. Mm-hmm. And that her electricity had been shut off, and that her death, but it happened a year ago. So this wasn't a death that happened last week or anything of that nature. So immediately we started investigating the commission staff as well as the commissioners. We filed emergency disconnect rules that say that you cannot turn off utilities until October, mid-October, because of the heat in the state of Arizona. And we can talk more about that. Was that the appropriate step to take? And then we started asking a lot of questions. What are our disconnect policies in our various utilities? How, if someone's having an issue and they call the Arizona Corporation Commission, how do we handle complaints? Mrs. Pullman's daughter actually called the ACC staff And how did we handle that? And so I jumped in with 2 feet immediately to try and understand how this occurred, and actually asked for a third-party investigation to look at the procedures our staff went through, as well as how APS handled that. Unfortunately, like in any political body, there are 5 people. You need 3 votes. I didn't have the votes. But I think there's still so many questions out there, and we're still in the middle of our investigations.
Was that the meeting that the one Democrat on the board, Sandra Kennedy, accused you of just trying to please Governor Ducey and the APS people rather than trying to get some answers? I know she got very political.
And it's crazy. I mean, what we're doing is not really a partisan nature. This is about the health and welfare of our citizens and the policies that we can regulate and impact. So I didn't agree, and honestly didn't pay a lot of attention to the political fighting that she had begun. The case here was, what are the policies in place and how are we ensuring that those that are the most vulnerable are being listened to and we know what's happening before we just automatically conduct a shutoff or a disconnect by one of our utilities? Since that time, again, it's only been a few weeks, but I've had the same conversation with Tucson Electric Power, with Southwest Gas, with our co-ops, which handle a lot of the rural communities. People handle it very differently. So if you are following the Arizona Corporation Commission, I think I've taken it that next step and actually sent letters to all the utilities, whether you're regulated or unregulated, and said, please send in data related to how you handle disconnects so that my staff and others can kind of vet through this and see what's a best practice. Should we standardize something? So I'm continuing to push and ask a lot of questions.
How does the TEP, our local provider, do they have a different policy, have you been able to ascertain, than APS concerning the disconnects?
Yeah, and I don't know the exact days and moments in which they disconnect, but every utility has a different policy. Mm-hmm. Some of the smaller utilities in the state have told me and others that, you know, when you're in a very small community, you know a lot of your customers. So you can make sure that someone comes by and sees whether they're homebound or there's a medical condition or you see a pattern of 3-4 months that they've been late pay. There are lots of programs that different utilities have put in place that let you pay in cash for so many days if you need to, because we're a very cash, you know, community or population. There are lifelines, there are nonprofit service organizations that can help when there are challenges. So I've also asked a lot of questions in that regard. What social service agencies are out there throughout the state to help some of our low-income and vulnerable populations?
So are they coming in, the folks from APS, before is there a meeting on August 6th? Are they're going to actually sit down in front of the board and answer questions?
So every month, the Arizona Corporation Commission has usually a 2-day meeting. Mm-hmm. You can watch those meetings if you're a listener and you're curious at azcc.gov. Just go to the website. On August 6th is our next open meeting. August 7th, we have asked APS and actually Don Brandt to come in himself as the leader of APS to answer a lot of the questions. We submitted a list of questions. I think in total there were 67, and I think myself and my team, we probably had more than 25 of them with many, many questions that we have. So I'm hoping that Don Brandt is in attendance and his team so that we can get a lot of the questions answered. And I imagine that's going to be a pretty long meeting.
Yeah, I bet.
One of the things that really stood out for me in the reporting on this issue was how TEP and APS have very different percentages of the number of people who get cut off. APS was cutting off a double-digit percentage of their customer base on an annual basis. Like, what was it, like 18% or something like that? And TEP was, you know, just a couple of percent over the year. Do you have any idea what accounts for that huge disparity in those figures?
I don't. I mean, I am, again, looking for best practices as a commissioner. So how many touches is TEP doing on a customer when they're having problems paying the bill? Is it, in this case, an APS, are they visiting? I know Mrs. Pullman received a door hanger notification that she was past due. How much further are they going? I think if you looked at some of the questions I submitted, it's a lot of it is about process and outreach. How proactive is a utility versus just being reactive? You're past due this percentage, therefore I'm cutting you off. So, I mean, that's why I think the commission acted so dramatically with an emergency ruling following learning about Mrs. Pullman's death and saying no disconnects over this hot period all the way out to October. That in and of itself has brought different challenges, because what's going to happen after October, right? I mean, that's something we're going to need to address as a commission.
And if somebody's run up a massive bill in the meantime, right, all summer long.
So there's a nonprofit organization in our state called Wildfire that deals with a lot of the low-income programs and helps the population. I know I've heard from them, and I'm sure the other commissioners have, that there's a lot of concern. What have you accrued through October? This is not a free pass. Everybody gets free electricity. This is for those that are the most needy. So what will we do with those that have accrued these bills, and what's the proper way to get them back reinstated on payment plan? Because obviously utilities need to survive and have dollars to build our infrastructure so we can ensure that we have electricity and water and so on. So there are just a lot of questions that I think all of us have.
So you said earlier you don't think this should be a political process. You were appointed to what is an elected office, elected on a partisan basis.
Yeah.
And really, when it gets down to it, beyond the issue of it being an elective office, APS especially has operated on a basis of basically trying to control people who are on that commission, you know, with massive dark money contributions to their campaigns. How do you try and make it seem, give people the perception at least, and I would say hopefully the reality, that you are an independent regulator of businesses rather than somebody who is in their pocket?
No, and I think that's an excellent question. I was surprised upon appointment learning of just all the history and the controversy that has really surrounded the commission. I think what people can see if they look at my actions, because that's really the only way I can prove, right, where I'm coming from, they can see that I've really been holding APS to the many, many questions I'm asking. I've had other actions related to helping kind of consumer protection ratepayers, whether it be in Ajo or Apache County, that we could talk about also. So there's no connection to APS or you're in the pocket of. It's just
not just you particularly, but the, the body as a whole.
Yeah.
That there are definitely connections to APS. And yeah. Will you be supportive of further efforts to bring that information to light?
You know, there was a one-year, maybe more than one-year process to instill a code of ethics. And in my second meeting at the Arizona Corporation Commission, we confirmed that. And there was a lot of discussion. One of the things we confirmed that you could not take dollars, of course, from utilities or in their employees. And I've just filed my campaign for, can't be called re-election because I was appointed, but election for the first time. And I'm running as a clean elections candidate. So what that means, for those that don't know, is people will give you $5 and you have to get so many, and then you get public dollars. So there's no one that I'll be beholden to, you know, that has paid more money or anything in that regard. I think it's the right thing to do. When people ask me, why are you running clean elections? It's, to me, there's been such a cloud of controversy over the Arizona Corporation Commission. It only made sense to do this that way.
All right, we're going to take Wayne's comment because it is, he's got a great suggestion before we take our break here. Wayne, you have some information regarding Tucson Electric Power. They have something called the Hero Fund. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, you know, first of all, I've been late a couple of times. You know, the bill slips behind the desk and all that. And TEP is not very fast on pulling the trigger. They've never turned my electricity off. And it seems like APS is really pretty fast on the trigger. TEP has a program for people who have trouble paying their electric bills. It's a HERO program. And, you know, and that may be why they're a little slower on the draw. And I wanted to know if APS has a similar program. It seems like with this poor lady, you know, they turn it off, you know, within days of her being late. And that just doesn't seem, you know, quite right. I'd like to know more details about that. But does APS have the HERO program?
And I think that's a great question, Wayne. And I am writing down HERO Fund and HERO program. I'm not aware if they've got something like that. What I hear a lot about are lifeline programs and processes in which they can respond to people as they call in. But I'll check. I'm not sure if they've got that.
And when you get your TEP bill, HERO Fund is basically you can round off say your bill is $99.10, you can round it off to 100 and put the 90 cents into the Hero Fund. So it's on your TEP bill, and it's a good way to kind of help folks in need who do have trouble paying their bill. That's where you'll find how to contribute to the Hero Fund. We're going to take our break right here. We'll be back with Leah Marquez Peterson, newest member of the Arizona Corporation Commission, and Dylan Smith. But right now, Dylan, I want to talk about my favorite bakery in town.
Your favorite bakery in town. What would that be?
Mona's Danish Bakery.
You may have mentioned this before.
Home of the Danish Kringle, Mona's, located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Open right now for lunch, but there really have been the emphasis lately on the breakfast, because they put in the new grill. They're open each morning at 6:30. For a full breakfast, you can have your eggs and pancakes or waffles, whatever you want, and then take a visit right next door, an arm's length away, basically. When I say next door, right next to the grill is the beautiful case loaded with all those great pastries. The almond croissant always seems to grab my attention, Dylan. Or a chocolate croissant sometimes sounds good. That sound good to you?
Not as good as the Kringle.
There you go. Mona'sDanishBakery.com.
I'm going for the Kringle.
All right. Mona'sDanishBakery.com. Also a link at BuckmasterShow.com. Not only to Mona's, but all of our great sponsors. We'll be back with Leah right after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To sign up for RTA updates, visit rtamobility.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies, as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an Ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, 1030, The Voice, trusted news talk here in Tucson. Leah Marquez Peterson, the newest member of the Arizona Corporation Commission, is with us, and Dylan Smith, TucsonSentinel.com. editor and publisher. Energy deregulation is something that's been going on in Illinois, Texas, California. There's a workshop coming up next week, right?
July 30th,
yeah.
Yes.
What's this issue all about, Leah?
I understand, and I'm learning as I go, but I understand that Arizona looked at this over 10 years ago, and it's still something that's growing, and there's a lot of interest in it throughout the nation. So we are going to have a workshop on July 30th. Again, your listeners can look at it online, watch us at azcc.gov, and see the workshop in place. But we're going to hear from stakeholders that support it and don't support it, and kind of gather information to see what direction we go.
It would basically open the door to competition for, like, Arizona Public Service or TEP. Is that what we're talking about?
Generally, yeah, but there's a lot to the complexities of creating energy. So you've got generation, transmission, distribution. I understand a lot of the states have gone for the very end, the retail side. What's that component where they're charging you to connect to your home or your place of business? So I want to hear the different perspectives as we move along. I've not heard great stories about people who've deregulated throughout the country. Of course, I think choice is great if you're unhappy with your utility. Right now, you have no choice, right? Because they have a certain territory. So parts of that's good, but I don't know if it's financially feasible. I've heard stories about residents really seeing a dramatic increase in the cost or their rate when things have been deregulated. But I want to better understand that. So what I've asked folks to do who come to meet with me is really bring data, bring a history of what's happened in other states so that I can learn and better understand it as we talk about this at the workshop.
Dylan.
I would imagine the existing utilities are probably not big fans of this. They basically have a guaranteed annual profit because the Corporation Commission has to approve how they're operating, which includes how much profit they're planning on making that year.
I would assume the same. I don't know. They'll make their case on the 30th also. But yeah, a utility at this point, we handle their rate case is what it's called. We're determining the price they charge their consumers. And they get a guaranteed rate of return for their investment, which we also approve. So yeah, I can't imagine they would be supportive of competition, but there's many facets to it, I understand. So let's see what they say on the 30th.
Are the electric rates comparable to other states here? Are we high? Are we low? Where are we in the big picture?
In terms of ranking nationally, I don't know. I know that California things are very different and Texas things are very different, but I don't know where we are in the national ranking.
When obviously the utility companies do come to you, they propose rate increases. What kind of assurance can the consumer have that you are looking out for their best interest? And I think this goes back to what Dylan brought up about the whole perception that the ACC is somehow a puppet of the big utility companies.
It's interesting because the utility companies, electric certainly, big players. Water, though, totally different world. I was very surprised, as someone recently appointed, that there are more than 300 private water companies in our state, 1,500 total if you count the municipalities. And water companies can be very small mom and pop to organizations that are more complex.
Do you regulate water companies?
We do.
Too?
So my two meetings I've attended, we've had a number of water companies come forward, some very small. Apache County was an example of one that we worked on my very first meeting. Learned it was owned by one gentleman, the Lord Water Company, and he had pumps fail and, not having the capital, had put the pumps on his personal credit card, had come into the commission for emergency rate case to cover the cost, and his whole community is dependent on those pumps working and being able to get water to their homes. So that was an immediate learning for me, how my experience running the Chamber of Commerce and having small businesses in the past could be very helpful as we try to figure out how do you get capital to an organization and that maybe hasn't had the capital infrastructure for years in place. And that was one in which he came to us for a return of the dollars that he'd spent. And I was able to make my first amendment and spread that out over 2 years instead of one. He still made whole, but it wasn't such a rate shock on the ratepayers. We had another case in Ajo. I mean, I could go into a lot of details, mm-hmm. but Ajo is a situation where they are going to face a tremendous rate increase this next year through AIC, which is their utility, who had to spend millions of dollars on capital investment so that their water would be in place and it was could be properly provided to their residents and to the businesses. But it was done in such a way and at such a time period that there's no gradualism for residents.
You bring up, we've mentioned that you, of course, you were with the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. How many years were you the head of
About 9.5.
9.5 years. And it was articulated in the Arizona Daily Star that the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce is having all sorts of financial trouble. Was the chamber in that serious a financial condition when you left to run for Congress?
No, it was not. And I was very saddened by that article. I think I told you off air that I felt it really was a political hit piece on me in particular. And I was sad to see that the Hispanic Chamber was kind of dragged through that. Like any nonprofit organization, the Chamber's a 501c6. When you have leadership change that's been there quite a long time, and I really worked with the board to build the chamber to close to 1,800 members, they're going to go through challenges and establishing new relationships, continuing some of the big events we did, and so on, and even retention of members. So they've had certainly challenges more recently. I'm still doing all I can to help and advise them, and they're still all very close friends. But they're going to do fine. They're going to survive this transition. They have a strong chamber administrator in place. Her name is Isabel. The board is still in place, so they're doing all they can to assure sponsors and members that things are continuing as usual and they're going to continue to grow. But it'll take some bumps along the road like any, I think, of our nonprofits or business
organizations.
But
the bill collectors were not chasing you out the door when you left to run for Congress.
No, they were not.
So how does it go from purportedly healthy to bankrupt in just a year?
So the Tucson Hispanic Chamber is not bankrupt. So I want to be clear on that. I think they've had a number of events where they are catching up on past due bills. Systems were not in place to help them handle that and at the time when they had these events. So I think that they're working out payment deals. They're growing their membership again because ultimately that's how you grow your revenue. I mean, the chamber is dependent on members, sponsors, and event revenue. That's how they make their dollars. And so they need to show that the majority of the members of the Hispanic Chamber are small business. You're talking 20 employees or fewer. So they've got to show they're continuing to provide great programming and mixers and luncheons and workshops, and they are. So people can still see great benefit from joining the Tucson Hispanic Chamber. So sure, they've got financial hardship as like most small businesses probably listening to the show right now. But they're in no way bankrupt. I mean, they're just facing these and need to work out payment plan with folks that they got behind with.
But you feel the article did sully your reputation?
No, I think that perhaps that was his intent, but no, I think it unfortunately put a lot of emphasis on these financial troubles that the Hispanic Chamber is going through when I don't think it needed to be front and center in the newspaper like that. They had worked out a lot of these payment deals, as I mentioned, and reinforced with sponsors and members that we've got things under control, we're moving forward.
But they're moving forward to getting back into the black.
Yeah, and inside Tucson Business, I know they run a, I used to write the column for that, and now Isabel has, and Laura, their chairwoman, and they wrote some very good opinion pieces, I think, on the direction they're taking the chamber. So I think they're in good shape, and they're going to move forward and continue to grow.
One thing we haven't talked about are our electric cars. I know that the sales of electric cars are not really what they thought they would be. However, people still are buying them. And how does the regulation, how does that fit into what you're doing at the ACC?
Yeah, I was excited to see when I took the position, which was May 30th. So I had an open meeting coming up right away. The commission had voted on an electric vehicle policy in, I think it was December or January. So they'd already kind of set a forward motion in terms of the state to those that manufacture electric cars and those that support them throughout the country, that Arizona was really someone that, a state that was focused on growing our number of electric vehicles. You also know from an economic development perspective, Lucid Motors building their manufacturing site in Casa Grande, Nikola building, I think it's in Coolidge. So there's a lot of interest in our state. So in the meeting we just had this last month, we actually voted and approved an electric vehicle implementation policy. What is that? In essence, it's kind of like the guide rails we're providing the utility companies to say, come back before our commission with pilot programs, with different programs that you'd like to put in place to encourage people to buy and use electric vehicles. We still have a long way to go. I don't know how many there are in the state, but it's probably like 30 to 40,000 or something. Mm. I know SRP, which we don't regulate, I heard a presentation by them just the other day that they're shooting for 500,000 electric vehicles in their territory by 2050. Well, that's an aggressive goal, and that's just SRP territory.
Why
so
do
what
you not
else
regulate them?
Because they are federally created.
Oh, wow.
So we regulate where they put transmission lines, but not their rates. They have a separate board and council.
Okay.
They're an elected agency themselves, sort of. Not everybody gets to vote. It's voted on by property owners in Salt River Project service territory. Those are the voting base for that. But so it's a sort of elective board that sets those rates.
All right, we are out of time, but we haven't talked about solar power. Do you regulate the solar power industry?
We regulate the utilities, which have their own solar power programs. We also regulate interconnection, which is a home that has solar panels and connection to the grid. We regulate pieces of that. So, yes, certainly, but not solar installers and those kind of entities.
Do we have time to touch on that for a minute?
Yeah. Let's take – we can carve out an extra minute. Go ahead, Dylan.
You would think that Arizona, and especially southern Arizona, would be one of like the solar power capitals of the world because we have this sun shining on us all the time, sometimes to our regret. But you have, you know, Germany leading the way, where it's much more cloudy.
And Holland with this solar electric car that they're working on. That could be a huge game changer.
In setting rates and regulating utilities, one of the controversial issues over the past decade or more has been the requirement for a certain amount of renewable energy to be produced by the utilities. How do we basically get more solar, get more renewable, and still make sure, you know, these companies are making the kind of profit they're looking for? There seems to be a whole lot of tension in between those two ideas, and that's been one of the biggest sticking points. As you said you were going to run to keep your seat. Where do you come down on that political issue?
Well, currently what the commission has said is 15% as a goal, and we now need to renew that. When I've met with utilities to understand, well, where are you? Have you accomplished this goal? Where are we at? I think APS is almost there, not quite. I understand TEP has far exceeded that, and they're closer to 30% in terms of renewable energy goals. So if we're different places throughout the state, I want to understand what's realistic to set as a goal for utilities across the state. I absolutely think that solar and wind and other renewable energies have an important part to play, but we also need to understand that balance with the grid and how we consume and get energy into our state of Arizona. Because unlike Texas, who's kind of on their own grid, and California, which has really embraced this, I think Arizona, and on behalf of my fellow commissioners, we need to figure out exactly where we need to be.
The Democrats, especially in the last election, were, you know, pushing for 20%, even 30% in the not very far off future. Is that realistic?
I did not support that initiative at the time, and you saw it fail, I mean, dramatically on the ballot. And I think it was because it was too soon, too fast. It required an incredible amount of capital infrastructure in order to accomplish that. So not realistic. It was more like, you know, just throwing a goal out there, and it would mandate such investment in the state of Arizona that we would have seen dramatic rate increases across the board. I think we need to find something that fits, but we need to be very thoughtful about it and work with our existing utilities.
All righty then, Leah Marquez-Peterson of the ACC, thank you for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate it.
And Dylan Smith will stick around. We have Joe Ferguson who will join us on the Buckmaster Show live line. He was at the mayoral debate this week, and we'll get some of his impressions about that when we come back after the break. It's Buckmaster on a Friday. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
This is Moa Mosgallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at mosgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Yeah. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news talk. Dylan Smith with me in studio. We just finished our conversation with Leah Marquez Peterson of the Arizona Corporation Commission, former head of the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and of course, one-time congressional candidate. Republican in CD2. It was interesting, Dylan, that she said that the Hispanic Chamber, not bankrupt, but working out their issues, financial issues.
The details of what's going on there internally have been, you know, a little bit sketchy and vague. So we're not, you know, quite sure whether they're going to, you know, bounce back in turn back into the sort of political force that they were, or if they're going to, you know, hunker down and be more of a business services group, or exactly what the plan is there.
Joe Ferguson's going to join us here, hopefully in a couple of minutes. He's on the road somewhere. But in the meantime, you on the show a couple of weeks ago went over this about the city election. The ballots will be in the mail this week. The city clerk's office will be sending out ballots for the Tucson's Democratic primary. That's going to be on...
Not just the Democratic primary.
For all the... Well, I'll turn it over to you to explain.
This election, I think, has gotten a little bit more confusing because of the lack of candidates mm-hmm. who are going to be listed on ballots rather than having a plethora of them. Even some of the officials who are in charge of communicating some information about the election have gotten a little bit tangled up in this. But there are only basically two contested races on the primary ballot where you have, you know, people going head to head and it really matters who votes and how many votes they get. And that is the Democratic primary in Ward 1 on the west side and the Democratic mayoral primary, which is everywhere in the city. So everybody who is a registered Democrat is going to be sent a ballot, at least with the mayor's race listed on it, and people who are non-party voters, independent voters, if they've indicated that they want to vote in that Democratic election, they'll be mailed one. They can still choose to do so as well. If you are a Republican and you will be sent a ballot, if you're in one of the wards where there's a candidate running for city council, you will get a ballot with just the one name on it, as well as a sort of place to fill in the blank for a Republican. But there are no official Republican write-in candidates, so none of those votes for Republican mayor in the primary will be counted anyway. It's all kind of tangled up in that. The Green Party is trying to get some folks onto the November ballot. They have some write-in candidates. So if they each remember to show up and write in themselves, they will win their primaries. Because there's one for each office. Mm-hmm. So they will earn their way onto the November ballot if they get a single vote.
Mm-hmm.
There's a write-in candidate in Ward 1 for the Republicans. If he remembers to vote for himself, he'll get on. And there are no Libertarian candidates, so even though Libertarians can cast a ballot if they want to and write somebody in, but none of those votes will count because only votes for people who have actually decided to run as write-in candidates count. Mm-hmm. Did that clear anything up?
I think so.
Maybe.
A little bit, maybe.
I mean, what it really comes down to is the important results we will be looking for throughout this election, and really it's a month-long election because it's vote by mail.
Mm-hmm.
So the election that starts August 2nd and runs through August 28th, I believe, or 27th this year, 27th, will be those Democratic primaries where you have three candidates running in the mayoral primary and four candidates running in that Ward 1 primary. Those are the results that we'll be looking for. Everything else is pretty much, we already know what's going to happen because, you know, you have people, you know, one candidate for the Democrats and Republicans running in Ward 2 and Ward 4. So obviously, if they and their family members remember to vote for him, they'll be fine.
Well, there is drama in this
because it's
primary.
Not a head-to-head
race. There's
drama
because we've got three candidates on the Democratic side. One of them will emerge pretty much as the how do we put this?
Far and away the leader for the November election. There will be an independent mayoral candidate in November.
Dr. Ed Ackerley will face off against the winner of the three-way Democratic primary for mayor. And if it's Raheena Romero, some have said that Dr. Ackerley would have a better chance than against the two other opponents, but who knows?
It's possible. It, you know, really depends on
I don't know
how that race progresses. I mean, we've seen some of the folks, each of the candidates in the Democratic primary, getting endorsements and support from what in an ordinary year you might consider unlikely quarters, and that's created a lot of dissension amongst Democrats as far as who outside the party is supporting each of those three candidates. Does Ackerley have a chance? Very, very slim. Mm-hmm. You know, if he really starts to run a higher profile race and really, you know, brings the noise, maybe something will happen for him. But I you know, whoever emerges from the Democratic mayoral primary will be the clear front runner. I don't think anybody, even Ackerley himself, would be arguing with that.
What is the issue that has separated these candidates? And I know we've had probably two dozen at least debates here for the mayoral race.
I think what it really comes down to,
personality?
Some of it is personality. Issue-wise, they, you know, agree on a great deal. It's shades of difference regarding, it's more tactical things than strategy. They all agree on a great number of things. There are some differences about how to appropriately deal with development and growth, especially as, Tucson is perhaps poised for another growth spurt again, and some changing in neighborhoods and more businesses maybe moving in, that really gets some people pretty cranked up about that and how to deal with that, how to not shut down our economy while still keeping Tucson the, you know, funky place that it is, gets a lot of people pretty hyped up.
Dylan Smith with us in studio on the Buckmaster Show, our Friday edition. What do we have there, Bob? Joe has called in. Joe is going to join us. Joe Ferguson on the line. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Bo. What are we talking about?
We're talking about the debate. We've got about 1 minute. You covered another one of the mayoral debates.
Did anybody sing? That's what I want to know.
I just asked Dylan the defining issue in the campaign. What is it?
I think, honestly, it's going to be the Sanctuary City Initiative. I think that it's really something where these candidates are set very far apart from the Democrats in Tucson who really want to see Sanctuary City Initiative succeed this fall, and they're on the other side of it.
But none of them are really supporting the Sanctuary Initiative in any way. How does that create any differences between them?
I think it just puts a split inside the Democratic Party. And so you're going to have different people going to the polls in November. Some of them are going to be voting for mayor, and some of them are going to be voting for Sanctuary City. And there's just no room in between.
So you think there will be a Democratic undervote?
Yeah.
Hmm. What was the issue that you wrote about today? And we have to be very quickly here. We're out of time, basically, Joe, but something about Rahina Romero's
co-chair
gave money.
I think a lot of people saw.
Go ahead.
A lot of people see her as a progressive candidate, and her co-chair is a solid, staunch Republican who's been giving to presidential candidates since 2000. And I think a lot of people were surprised to see her as such a progressive candidate who likes to talk about how much she's against Trump, have somebody who gave at least $2,700 to his election in 2016.
Joe, were you up in Flags? Are you up in Flagstaff? And how's that the fire doing up there? Are they getting a handle on it?
They're getting a handle on it, but they need some rain.
It's not under control?
Not yet.
All right. Joe Ferguson, thank you, Joe, for joining us. And we'll check in with you next week. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Bill.
All right. Joe Ferguson with us on the live line. Dylan, that's going to do it for us. We've got Weekend Watch with Matt Russell coming up next on Buckmaster on 1030.
It's the important part of the Voice. Show.
There you go. All right. Be right back.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Monday, the Monday Political Face-Off with commentators Don Jorgensen and Bob Westerman. Plus, what's new at Tucson's Reed Park Zoo? Buckmaster during the noon hour. We're on 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. Anywhere in the world live listening, that's on my website, buckmastershow.com. We'll stir it up, baby. There we go. This portion of the Buckmaster Show, specifically Weekend Watch with Inside Tucson Business, Food, and Beverage columnist Matt Russell, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Just a three-hour drive from Tucson. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. There you'll find a listing of some great places to stay and all sorts of recreation opportunities in a place where you can cool off. It's, I don't know, 10 degrees cooler, I'd say, because of their elevation over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Here's Mr. Cool Daddy himself, Mr. Matt Russell. I've got Dylan Smith with me in studio, and Dylan has been just dying, Matt, for some good barbecue.
Absolutely. Hey, Dylan, always great to hear you on the show. You know, in the couple of years since they opened their doors on Sabino Canyon Road near Snyder, Three Canyon Beer and Wine Garden has kind of been one of the go-to destinations for people that love great beer and wine, but without a food menu, those of us who go there hungry have to, you know, settle for a food truck that'll swing by from time to time. But that has all changed now with the opening of their new kitchen, and thankfully, barbecue takes center stage. Now, some of the stars include ribs and brisket and pulled pork. Of course, they've got a nice spectrum of burgers and brats. Definitely the kind of cuisine that I want with my craft brews. The kitchen opens at 5 o'clock today, so check it out at Three Canyon.
What's going on at the farmer's market? We've got some great ones in town.
Yeah, summer is in full swing, and these long and hot days, I think, kind of bring along the best of summer's sweet and juicy produce. And this succulence will be celebrated Saturday and Sunday from 8 a.m. to noon at Heirloom Farmer's Market's Summer Quench Fest. Now, you're going to have some of the best watermelons and peaches and cucumbers that our local Arizona farmers have to offer. And in addition, the Quench Fest is going to have live music and all kinds of special deals from some of the market vendors. It's tomorrow at the Rincon Valley location on Old Spanish Trail, and Sunday at the Rialto Park location, of course, over on First Avenue.
Dylan Smith with me in studio. Dylan's been known to enjoy a fine glass of whiskey, but I think, Dylan, you'd go for a little rum on occasion, wouldn't you?
Here and there.
Well, a nice aged rum.
Does Matt have something to tempt me?
He does.
Okay, listen to me loud and clear, Dylan Smith.
All right.
The World Spirits Competition in San Francisco, they're, of course, considered by industry leaders to be the top liquor competition on the planet, and the ratings from the judges who taste blind can make or break a brand. And check it out. This year's results have people all over the world looking at Southern Arizona's own Elgin Distillery.
Whoa.
Because their Regalo de Vida rum took best in show in the aged white spirit category. This is the competition's highest honor, guys. So if you want to try what is now officially the best rum in the world, you have to head to Elgin this weekend and grab a bottle while you can. It's at Elgin Distillery. I tell you what, man, all across the spirits spectrum all over the world, people are scratching their heads wondering where is Elgin and what are they doing down there that is chalking up better points than some of the world's best rums that you and I know well.
Whoa, that is a huge shocker, Ben. You heard it first right here on the Buckmaster Show. Matt Russell, have a great weekend.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks.
Adios.
A lot. Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of the program. Original theme music composed by Christopher, and thanks to Rosemary Brandt, my assistant. Everyone here at Bustos Media in Tucson, our mothership, and all of the great people here who support us. On behalf of Dylan Smith, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great weekend.
KVOI Cortero, AM 1030.